Welcome to State of Mind, podcast with me, Dr. Shyam Bhatt. I'm a physician and psychiatrist, and this is the podcast about everything to do with mental health. So we'll talk about psychology, psychiatry, neurobiology, the effect of culture on the mind, and a lot more. If you've been following my radio show, either Heartline or MindFit, welcome to this podcast. It's great to have you. I can't take your calls, but you can send in your questions, comments. I'll give you the email at the end of the show. You can comment on YouTube or Facebook, wherever you listen to this. Now, this is obviously not scripted. It's not very structured, but there's a lot to talk about. And I think personally that this is the most important topic possibly in India, which is the mental health in this country. You probably know the statistics, but if you don't, I want to share some really alarming statistics with you. A couple of months ago, The Lancet had a medical journal carried a study which explored, which looked at the suicide rates across the world. And in that study, they found that the number one cause of death in Indians in the ages 15 to 39, in that age group, the number one cause of death is suicide. Think about that. If you're between 15 and 39, the number one cause of death in your age group is suicide. Now, that's an incredibly alarming statistic when you consider that 70% of our country is in that age group, which means that the number one cause of death for 70% of our country is suicide. And of course, suicide is the result of a emotional or mental disturbance. And I'm saying that, assuming that you already know that, but when I look at the newspapers, I think that there's a misconception about suicide itself, you know. You read the newspaper, you just pick up your newspaper, and you'll read headlines like, a so-and-so committed suicide because his mother shouted at him. Or this person committed suicide because, you know, his wife or her husband shouted or something like that. And invariably, that leads to a kind of witch hunt where the police and other people are investigating suicide. In fact, you'll read the newspaper and the police says, listen, we are still investigating the cause for suicide. That is actually ridiculous. The police investigating the cause of suicide is like the police saying we're investigating the cause of heart attack. It's a medical condition. Suicide is a end result of a psychiatric condition that was not diagnosed and that not treated. And what happened just prior to the person committing suicide is not necessarily the cause of suicide, you know. A person suffering from depression, for example, clinical depression, will experience sadness, will experience guilt, will experience low self-esteem. They'll feel like their entire world is dark and bleak. And in that world, say one more thing goes wrong. That day, the person... maybe something really trivial. That person tried to catch a bus and missed the bus. And suddenly to that person who's suffering from clinical depression, missing the bus on that day means their entire life is going to be like that. It's always going to be them losing out and they might actually commit suicide. And the newspaper reporter, in all their naivety, might look at that and say, hey, this person committed suicide because they missed the bus. And that's unnecessary sensationalism. It trivializes the issue and it really... I think further sort of creates mythologies about depression and suicide. So I just want to be, this is a digression, but that's what this podcast is going to be. It's going to be exploring the various branches of this amazing topic of mental health. And so let me just say this, we'll return to this topic. And yes, I'm not saying these topics are necessarily the most entertaining topics, right? I'm sure there are lighter topics too that you can explore. But is it relevant? Is it interesting in that sense, in the sense that it is extremely relevant to you and to everybody in our country, in this world? Absolutely. So thanks for joining me on this podcast. And I'm glad you're here on this journey. So as I was saying, suicide, we need to understand, is the final result of an emotional illness, a mental illness, an emotional turmoil that was not diagnosed, not treated, and the person unfortunately ends up killing themselves. And in this country, it's a number one cause of death, as I was saying, in the age of 15 to 39. Every 4 minutes, somebody commits suicide in this country. In the time that I've been speaking, two people have committed suicide in this country. And, you know, when a person commits suicide, it's devastating, obviously. The person, you know, we lose that person, their family is devastated, the community is devastated. It's a serious thing. And we're losing young lives, people who are the future of this country. So if you're a policymaker listening, I hope, you know, mental health is absolutely on top of your agenda. If you're a person, a regular person, you know, I absolutely think this should be part of the of our everyday conversation, something we should all recognize. So that's why the show, that's why this podcast. But we'll also talk about how to use these insights to not just, you know, treat depression or anxiety. That we'll talk about that. We'll talk about preventing that. But we'll also talk about how to reach your highest potential, how to break through internal psychological, emotional barriers that prevent you from realizing your complete life, to live this life authentically and completely. That's what we'll talk about as well. So recently, I've been hearing a lot, I've been seeing a lot on social media. There's a lot of chatter about self-love, right? By the way, Happy New Year, I should say, because a lot of these Happy New Year tweets and posts are talking about this idea that, hey, let 2019 be the year that you love yourself. And of course, it should be. I think if you aren't doing that, that's really important. Loving yourself is really vital. It's absolutely crucial. I think to love yourself is absolutely essential for happiness and for a good relationship. However, most people who say they love themselves don't love themselves. If you look at America, where in the 1970s, this became all the rage. By the way, we always about, I think, you know, from a psychiatric, psychological standpoint, we're about 30 or 40 years behind America. To understand what's happening in India today, we must go back to the United States of 1960s, 1970s, a time when their society was changing as drastically as ours is changing today, right? In terms of gender equations, gender roles, in terms of prosperity, economics, social mobility, the same changes are happening in India that you saw in the US back then. And in the 1970s, there was a lot of literature about self-esteem. Famously, a psychologist called Nathaniel Brandon, who wrote a really good book called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. And it's a great book. You should check it out. So he wrote this. He was actually a disciple of the famous writer Ayn Rand, who you might have heard about. She wrote or read, sounded a bit condescending. You might have read Ayn Rand. She's written Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And, you know, she preached the philosophy, which she called objectivism. Essentially, it was an extremely selfish philosophy. Her idea was that each and every person must look out for themselves. That altruism and the idea that you're here to sacrifice yourself for somebody else is totally not human and not, you know, that's not the way to live. So Nathaniel Brandon, who, by the way, famously had an affair with Ayn Rand, he was, I think, 25 years her junior, maybe 30, I'm not sure, but many years her junior. Not saying that that's wrong again, but it speaks to a certain dynamic, a certain psychological dynamic. So Nathaniel Brandon has an affair with Ayn Rand, is really influenced by her philosophy, and then grows up to be this very influential psychologist who writes a couple of very popular bestsellers about self-esteem. And he was such an articulate prophet of self-esteem that very soon in the US, everybody accepted this fact that in order to be happy, in order to be fulfilled, in order to have a good relationship in your adult life, you must build good self-esteem in our kids. And of course, it made sense. It made intuitive sense because anyone who suffers low self-esteem, who doesn't like themselves, doesn't like an aspect of themselves, who criticizes themselves, is unhappy. That's for sure. I'm not denying that. But what happened was, well, they started implementing all these self-esteem programs in schools. So teachers were taught not to criticize kids, to encourage them, to compliment them, to give them rewards and prizes. Even if you didn't get first place, it's okay. Everybody's a winner. You're a star. You are unique. You're beautiful. There's nobody like you. You have unbelievable talent. all of these beautiful, positive affirmations, right? All of these children were exposed to that in the 1970s and 80s. Well, what happened to those kids as adults? Now, you might think that these kids grew up to be remarkably well-balanced adults who had beautiful relationships, who were very successful, very happy, and so on and so forth. I wish that were the case, but when psychologist Jean Twenge, who wrote a book called Generation Me, she went back and studied this. So she interviewed all the adults, all these kids who had now grown up and who were adults. She interviewed them. She examined their lives. She did a psychological profile. And she found that they were more prone to depression, more prone to dissatisfaction, and suffered from narcissism, a sense of entitlement, a sense of specialness. A specialness which was supposed to be healthy had now become morphed into something that was actually quite the opposite, unhealthy. A feeling that I, because I exist, I deserve to get what I want. And if I don't get what I want easily, then I will be frustrated and angry. So, you know, the classic millennial personality. I don't believe millennials are all like that or even mostly like that. However, obviously, it's more likely to happen in that kind of environment, right? So what happened was that they were told these positive messages. These positive messages were all about saying that you are the greatest, I'm the greatest, even if I haven't done anything to deserve that. And it only created the sense of entitlement. It didn't work out. So when we talk about self-love and you say, you know, I should love myself, I think that's absolutely true. But what kind of love? What does it mean to really love yourself? Now, here's where it gets really interesting, because if you look at what the East discovered, you could argue that they theorized, but discovered through meditation and through contemplative practice, was that in fact, there is no self to love or to hate or to judge. That anything, any idea you have of the self is only an idea, it is not the self. That in other words, you can never quite comprehend who you are. You are limitless. Each one of us is. And therefore, any idea you have of the self will only be a limited idea and in a sense will only imprison your real self. For example, if you think, I look great, I love myself because I look great, or I love myself because I'm intelligent, or I love myself because I'm a great human being, or even I love myself. I don't put any contingency on it, but I just say I love myself. Well, if you say any of those, then what you're also saying is that love is conditional on something. The moment you change, or the moment you don't meet that idea of the self, you'll stop loving yourself. Or you will love yourself, but when you love yourself, you'll be unable to love another person because you've invested all that energy into feeling special and unique. So the East had something really significant here. When I said earlier, by the way, they said, there is no self to love. It's actually not even that. There was no comprehension of the self. Famously, it is said when the Dalai Lama was told that the great disease in the West was people hating themselves, he couldn't understand the concept. He couldn't understand how anybody could hate the self, because even the idea of a self that I can examine was not something that was part of our own ancient Eastern culture. So in other words, living in today's world makes you aware of your individual self. It heightens self-absorption. All the ads you see, all the movies, everything is about you living that perfect life. You're looking great, you having that perfect house, you having, you know, everything has to look great and just be perfect. Heightens what you desire. And you say that that's what I want to be, to completely love myself. Yes, I love myself. And when I love myself, that's the way I'm going to live, you know, with all of these perfect things happening in my life. So it heightens all of that. How much we absorbed about our own lives, our own selves. We keep obsessing and obsessing and obsessing. And in that sort of atmosphere, if you say love yourself, then self-love will become one more way to obsess about your own self. And that is a trap. It is a one-way road. Don't take that road. So what do I recommend? I don't recommend hating yourself. I don't recommend criticizing yourself. I don't recommend judging yourself. I don't recommend judging others either. But I do recommend letting go of the need to define yourself, the need to even have a concept of the self. I like to use the metaphor of a rock and a river. Which are you more like? Are you more like the rock? Or are you more like the river? Now, most people say intuitively and instinctively that I'm more like the river. And because, in a sense, you know that you are. You know that like the river, you are flowing, you're alive, you're in motion, you're dynamic, you're always changing. Yes, your body seems the same, but you know that every day is changing a little bit. You know that your thoughts are fleeting, they come and go. You know that your feelings are like waves on an ocean. So you know that you're a river. But why do you treat yourself like a rock? Because that's the way we talk to ourselves, we examine ourselves, we judge ourselves. We forget the complete dynamic nature of our being and we keep having this idea of who we are supposed to be, look at who we are and find ourselves wanting and then we criticize ourselves. So the opposite of self-criticism, the opposite of self-judgment, of self-loathing and self-hatred is not self-love. It's the disappearance, the dissolving of the self into life and into existence. We'll talk more about that at the next podcast. I hope you enjoyed this brief podcast. It can be longer if you like. Send in your comments, your suggestions. Let me know what topics you want to talk about. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to hear from you. You can send a small voicemail, even a small video, short of yourself asking the question. Or if you're shy, just send in your comments, okay? Well, it's been great having you. This is Dr. Shyam. I'll see you back in the next State of Mind.